We're holding on Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph by the first Mishnah. We learned yesterday about Yayin Nesech Asering, even B'chol Shehu, when it's Min B'minoy, when you have wine mixed into wine. We had various points in the Gemara about exceptions to that rule. So now the Mishnah goes on to talk about other examples besides for Yayin Nesech, things that Aser B'chol Shehu and where there's no Bitzel possible. So the Mishnah says, Elu Asurin, the following things are Asur Bahana, Va'oistrin B'chol Shehu, and they Asur, whatever they're mixed into, even if it's a tiny amount, there's no Bittul B'shishim, or Bittul in larger amounts, as we talked about yesterday, there are some things, such as Truma and Urla and other such things that can be bottled, but in a larger amount, you need 100 or you need 200, as the case may be, but here they Asur B'chol Shehu. And it means that all of them are osur. So there is discussion over here whether we're talking about a whole item mixed with other whole items, or whether we're talking about just an absorption of flavor, etc. Anyway, the Mishnah says Yayin Nesech. The first one is Yayin Nesech, as we talked about yesterday, where it can mean actual wine that was poured in honor of Avodah Zarah, in which case it's also as Tikrovis Avodah Zarah, or we talked about it could conceivably mean also just plain wine of Goyim, but maybe only in times when the Goyim were particular about this idea of Nisuch. Anyway, so Rashi explains, for example, in the case of Yayin Nesech, it means that one barrel of Yayin Nesech got mixed in with 1,000 other ones. So then they're all also, they're all also because Dabar Shav Minyan. So as opposed to, we talked about yesterday, about drops of Yayin Nesech falling into kosher wine, then that might be different. Then we did say they can't be bottled, but we said that actually, according to many Amiroyim, if the Yayin Nesech wine falls into kosher wine, it will in fact be bottled. So basically, there's machlokas whether we need over here a dover sholem. Do you need a complete thing over here, as Rashi is saying, a complete barrel, or is it enough even that it's not a dover sholem? That's, for example, a piece of a dover sholem or something like that. Would that be enough to aser b'chol shehu, like we're saying in our Mishnah? Okay. So anyway, so Yayin Nesech, Avodas Kechavim, and Avodah Zarah, as it talked about throughout the Masechta. So you have, for example, an actual image that was worshipped as Avodah Zarah, so now it got mixed up with a whole bunch of other ones, so then all of them are osur. Keep in mind, earlier in the Masechta, I talked about in detail, there are statues that are not worshipped as Avodah Zarah, so you could have a bunch of statues, some of which were worshipped as Avodah Zarah, and others were not, and you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell the difference just based on looking on them. Alright, continues the mission of Otis Levuvin, also skins of animals that have the heart, that have a hole in the area of the heart. Earlier in the Masechta, it explained that there were places where the Goyim had a ritual to do that. They would cut out the heart of a live animal and offer it to Avodah Zarah, and so then afterwards, the skin of that animal would have a hole in it in the place where the heart had been when the animal was alive, and then, so now that skin is part of Tikrovis Avodah Zarah. It's something that was used to worship, it's something that was brought a korban to Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's also Bahano. V'shodan Niskol, also a Shodan Niskol, an ox that killed someone and now has to be put to death by Beis Din. So we learn, the Gemara learns in various places from Sukkim that it's also Bahano. So again, if we're talking about that it has to be Dafka Dover Shalem, then it would be talking about either that it got mixed up with other ones when it's alive, so you have Nigmar Dino, the Beis Din had decided the verdict, this animal has to be put to death, and now, while still alive, it got mixed up with other ones, or the other possibilities we could be talking about that it was after Skila, and then a person took a Chatzicha Ru'ile Skabit, the Gemara is going to talk about over here, we're talking about all these things in the Mishnah, are Dover Shav Minyan. These are all things that are sold by number, because they have a cheshivus of their own, and therefore, so if we're talking about that, if we're talking about after the shor is dead, then we'd have to be talking about a piece from it, a chaticha ru'il is scabbing. So those are the possibilities as far as shor and nisko. The egla arufa, and then you have the egla arufa from this past week's parasha. So again, we can be talking about whether when the animal is still alive. So the Ran talks about this in the Shor HaNiskal, that in both cases we're talking about the animal is still alive. The same way as the Shor HaNiskal becomes also Bahana, once Nigmar Dinah, the same way with the Egla Arufa, once it's brought down to the Nachal Eisan, even before they actually decapitate it, it's already also Bahana. And again, the other possibility is that the Egla was killed and then a person took a piece of meat from it and it's a Chaticha Royal Iskabin. So that's Egla Arufa. The Tzipora Mitzora. Then you have the birds that are used for a Mitzora, where one of them is shechted. Now the other one, the one that's sent away alive, that one's not also Bahana. But the one that's shechted is also Bahana, even though it was a kosher shlita, you're not allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to have Bahana from it. It has to be buried. So now if one of them got mixed up with a bunch of other birds, so then they're all going to be also. Usta'ar Nazir, the next one is the hair of a Nazir. When a Nazir finishes his Nazirus, he shaves his hair and puts it under the fire where his Shlomim is cooking in the Beis Mikdash. So that hair is also Bana. So again, if that hair gets mixed up with other hair, then you have a problem. Upeter Hamur. Then you have and the point is, Rashi makes a point. In other words, like this, people would sell hair for sheitlach or whatever. They would sell. We're not talking about an individual hair. We're talking about for example, a hank of hair. This hank of hair that contains approximately this many hairs was selling for X amount. It actually goes into a detail over here. In fact, let's talk about Bosa B'cholav and then we'll talk about it. So then the next one on the list is a Peter Hamur. A Peter Hamur is also, that has to be redeemed for sheep and the Moisif Devar after. If not, then you have to decapitate it. So now, again, you have where Peter Hamur was mixed up with other Hamurim. Here also you have a Machlokas, whether we're talking about over here. And we have Rama Cholkos Rishonim on the face. A number of Achronim point out that, wait a minute, the Petach Hamor is not also Bahana in and of itself. You have to redeem it for a sheep, but it's not really also Bahana. So the Reed explains that we're talking about that the owner is not around and therefore you can't be poided, which is a little hard to understand because the fact is, the halacha is you could, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that you could in fact be poided to somebody else. So you have some discussion about that, and not necessarily does that make a Dover Shiesh L'Matirin. We learned yesterday something that Tosfos makes a point that Dover Shiesh L'Matirin is not counted if there's a tircha involved. And here there may be a tircha involved in being poided for a sheep. The Meiri explains we're talking about again that the Petach Hamor has already been decapitated, similar to the possibilities as far as the Shor HaNiskal and the Egla Arufa that we're talking about, that it was already killed, and now a person is taking a piece of meat from it. Rashi doesn't explain it that way because it's not a chaticha roi l'iskabed. A person doesn't use a piece of donkey meat to honor his guests. You could argue that goyim do maybe, but that's a different question, whether something that's available, that's allowed only for the goyim, can be considered chaticha roi l'iskabed. Okay, anyway, that's the Petach Hamor. The next one is Bosa B'cholav. So now what we mean over here, Rashi says, is a piece of meat that was cooked together with milk, and now it became also because now the milk gave it a flavor. Now that piece of meat got mixed up with other pieces of meat. So now all of them are going to be also Bahana, because Rashi points out, there's Machloikas, where the Bosa B'cholav is also Bahana, and our Mishnah holds that it is, and in fact that is the halacha, Bosa B'cholav is also Bahana. Rashi also goes into some length over here to explain. It does not mean that if a drop of milk falls into a pot of meat, that it's not that it's not bottled with shishin. So Rashi explains that no, because everything we're talking about over here in our Mishnah, as the Gemara is going to explain, is strictly a dovish of a minion. It's something which is sold by number. Drops of milk are not sold by number. So there you would have the regular rule of bittul b'shishim, or strictly speaking, bittul when you can't detect the flavor of it anymore, which is ordinarily assumed to be b'shishim. and min b'shelo min b'she. And min we talked about yesterday is generally is not is also only benos in tam. So no, we're talking about over here in this case over here b'sa b'falav. We're talking about a piece of meat that absorbed milk, and now that piece of meat itself is a dabbush of a minyan. It's an important thing, and now it gets mixed up with other pieces of meat. And the same way, all the other examples in the Mishnah is not talking about a drop of something that got mixed up with other drops of things, but rather we're talking about a whole item by itself, which is a davar shemenyan. Continues the mission of a third amishtaleach, the goat that's sent off to Azazel. It's also b'hanna. Once it's thrown off the cliff, by the way, then the Gemara explains in Yoma that the limbs of it are mutar b'hanna, because the Torah is not going to tell you to go and throw it off into the middle of nowhere, and now years later somebody may find the bones of it and have hana from them and have committed an aveda. So it's mutar b'hanna after that, but we're talking about while it's still alive. Goes to Grosh, he takes out the word sorya mishtaleach altogether. Because again, when it's alive, it's not necessarily also b'hana, and when it's dead, then the Gemara clearly says there in Yoma that it is mutar b'hana. However, the Gemara does discuss that point, so the Gra says maybe you could keep those words in and say that our Mishnah is strictly according to that opinion. Anyway, the next one is v'chulin shenishchatu ba'azara. The next one is chulin that was shechted in the azara, which again are also b'hana. So harayu asurin, so all these things are asur, va'usrin b'chol shehu, and they asur whatever they get mixed into, even if it's a tiny amount in a large mixture. We don't say bitul, because again, each one of them is a davar shel minyan, each one of them is a davar chashuv. Well, so the Gemara asks, Tana, Maika Choshev, what exactly is the Tana, what in this whole list of the Mishnah, what exactly is the common factor among all of these, that the Tana is listing all these things? E davar shel minyan kachoshev, if he's just counting anything which is sold by number, then he should also mention pieces of nevela, because those are also they're also to eat. In other words, the Gemara is assuming that maybe the Tana of the Mishnah is mentioning not only things that are also to eat, or not only things that are also b'hanah, but even things that are only also to eat. So we if you're going to tell me the Tana wants to list only things that are also b'hana, and therefore fine, we understand why nevela is not listed, because nevela is not also b'hana, well then, listening nami chometz for Pesach. Well then he should also be listing chometz on Pesach, because that's also, if it gets mixed up among other ones, then they're all also. Now, the question is, isn't it a davar shiyesh lebatirin? Midrabanan, it remains oser af chometz to overall of a Pesach. Midaraisa, it would be allowed after Pesach. So maybe it's not listed because it's davar shiyesh lebatirin. So the Ran actually explains that you have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara Psachim that says that actually that chometz is also after Pesach is actually also daraisa. The halacha is not like him. The halacha is also only drabanan, but nevertheless, you do have that opinion. So the Ran explains that our mission, that the Gemara is asking according to Rabbi Yehuda. Another point, the Vilna Gaon makes a point actually that yes, this particular chometz will be mutter after Pesach, but then if that same chometz is left around until next year, it will become also again. So it can't be called davar shiyesh lematirin. You have, let's say, classic davar shiyesh lematirin is an egg that was laid on Yom Tov. It's also on Yom Tov. It's mutter after Yom Tov. It will never become also again, at least not by virtue of the dinim of Yom Tov. And the same thing with other examples of davar shiyesh lematirin here, where every year the same chometz, if it's still kept around, is going to become also, then the Vilna Gaon argues that's not called davar shiyesh lematirin. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, so the question again is, what exactly is the criteria that the Mishnah, that the Tana of our Mishnah is using for his list? So the answer is Amar Rav Chiya Ba'Aba V'Yitamer Rav Yitzchak Napa Hani Hai Tana Tauti Islay. The answer is that the Tana is listing only things that have both criteria, davar shemaminyan ve'isurei hana. It has to be something. Which it's both. You're right. If it was only one criterion or the other, then you'd have a problem why he's not listing some other things. And you wouldn't say Tana v'Shayer, by the way. You wouldn't say the Tana just left things out, because he does say at the end, he does say Hare Elu. These are the ones that are also implying that he's giving a complete list. But you were saying, in fact, he's going to use two criteria to determine what belongs on the list. Yisurei Hana, Davar Shel Minyan, V'Yisurei Hana. So therefore, so chometz for Pesach is not a davar shel minyan, and nevela is not also b'hanah. Now, Rashi does make a point that when it comes to chametz, if you have a slice of chametz bread that got mixed up with other slice of chametz bread during Pesach that got mixed up with matzah, so now it will be bottle. However, Rashi makes a point that you will have to throw one of them into the river, and then the rest of them you can give to your dog. There is quite a bit of discussion about why Rashi says that you would have to throw one into the river. There are cases in halacha where you have something as bottle, but you nevertheless have to take it out. An example is where truma got mixed into chulin. As long as you have 100 times as much chulin, then a zur can eat it. But you do have to take one piece of, you do have to take one piece and give it to the kohen. There you have a concept called gezel ashevet, because otherwise you're depriving the kohenim of their truma. But here you don't have that consideration. Chametz of Pesach, there's no problem. There's no issue of having to remove a piece in order to do that. So why is Rashi saying that you have to take out the one piece? So and why is Rashi saying that then after that you'd have to give the rest to your dog, implying it would still be also to eat? On the face of it, it should be mutter to eat because it's bottle. So there is a discussion about that. Rashi himself is going with Shitasa. He holds in a Gemara and Beitza that whenever you have something as bottle, you do have to remove one of them. So even when it's not a matter of Gezel Ashevet, he would still hold that you need to remove one. And you also have details about, for example, that just because something is bottled doesn't mean that one person can eat all of it, because then for sure he's going to be eating the Isser at some point. So based on that, then, is why Rashi would be saying that you have to throw out the one. And then as far as why you can't eat it, the Noda Yehuda discusses about that and says that as far as the Isra Achila, it's considered Dabash Yesh Lamatirin, and that's why you can't eat it. But as far as Hana, he brings that it wouldn't be, that there's a difference between Isra Achila and Isra Hana, because there's a difference between Hana, where you're actually using it up, versus Hana, where you're not using it up, and therefore, so he says you'd be able to have Hana, where you yourself are not using it up, but not where you yourself are eating it. But that's the criteria of the Mishnah, is it has to be both. It has to be also Hana, and it has to be Dover Shemaminyan. So the Gemara asks, for listening a Gozi Perech V'Rimoni Abadon. Well, then, by that logic, the Mishnah should be listing, should be giving a list of things from a Mishnah in Orla that includes a Gozi Perech, nuts of Perech. Rashi explains Perech is a name of a place. Some other Mephoshim explain a Gozi Perech means a type of nuts that are soft-shelled Perech, like a Avodas Perech, where you can easily crack them, where you can easily break them open. So maybe like peanuts or something that have very relatively soft shells, rimone bodon, and pomegranates of bodon, which is also a name of a place. So those kinds of things. There's a whole list of six or seven things in a Mishnah in Orla, which are all Dovash of a Minyan. And you have, if any of them are Orla, or any of them are Kalaya Kerem, then they're examples of Dovash of a Minyan, and the Mishnah says over there they're not bottles. So you have, for example, one Egoi's Perech that's mixed up with 1,000, which happens to be Orla. It's a tree nut, for example, so it happens to be Orla. And if it gets mixed up with 1,000 others, all of them are going to be also. So that's also a Dovash of a Minyan. It's also Hana. Why, if our mission is listing anything which is Dovash of Minyan and also Hana, then why doesn't it give that list from Masech Orla? The Dovash of Minyan be Isurei Hanahu? And the answer is, you don't need to. It's on Olehosem, because we have that Mishnah, exactly that. We have that Mishnah in Orla, where you have that list over there, and the Mishnah says, Haroi la Orla Orla, of the things listed over there, those which are appropriate to Orla, are then consider what would happen if they're Orla. Haroi la Kalaya Kerem, Kalaya Kerem. The ones that are suitable for Kalaya Kerem, consider what would happen if they were Kalaya Kerem. Namely, the Mishnah mentions over there, so for example, so you have a Gozi Perech and Rimone Bodan, which are tree fruits. But then you have, for example, another one on the list over there, for example, is Kikris Shabalabayas, is loaves of bread that were baked by a private person. Those come from wheat. Wheat is not subject to Orla, of course, but wheat can be subject to Kalaya Kerem. You plant wheat and you vines, then they become also Bana. So therefore, the Mishnah is saying, when I'm telling you this list of six things or seven things over there, according to Rabbi Akiva, which are also, if they got mixed up with a larger amount, then the whole mixture is also Bana. And then we're talking about Orla and Kalayakarim. You should realize some of the things on this list are subject to Orla. Some of them are subject to Kalayakarim. Tree fruits are not subject to Kalayakarim. You plant a tree near vines, nothing happens. Mashenkin, you plant grapes, you plant grain or vegetables near vines, then you have a problem. And vice versa, Orla applies only to trees.
Trees are never going to be Kalayakarim.
So trees can never be Kalayakarim, and vice versa, non-trees can never be Orla. So the point is, in other words, you have that list over there in the Mishnah, in Orla, so now our Mishnah in Avodah Zarah does not need to repeat it over there as well. Tosfos points out in that case, and why was the Gemara asking about Nevela, we have that in a Mishnah in Cholin. And the answer is that we're mentioning over here Bosa B'Cholov, and therefore it would make sense to mention Nevela together with it. But here, where you have a whole list of things with Orla and Kalayakarem, then there's no reason to repeat that list over here. And another point is that B'Cholal here is the main place to list it. So therefore, Gemara is saying that on the face of it, you should hear where we have one comprehensive list of all the things that are Asur and B'chol Shehem would have been the appropriate place to put in that list as well. And the answer is we don't need to, because the fact is you can find them over there.
Put the phone top of the long flat over there, won't work. Mm-hmm. On the flat, no, I'm saying over there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I guess.
Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Velisni kikris shabala bias." Okay, so at least then, of that list in Masechta Orla, at least it should list kikris shabala bias, loaves of bread of a bala bias, l'inyan chometz Pesach, insofar as chometz on Pesach, they are listed insofar as Kalayakarim. Where if the wheat that was used for these kikros shabala bayis was planted near grapevines and became osabana, and now that bread that was made from that wheat became mixed up with 1,000 other loaves of bread, they're all osir, fine. But here we're mentioning chometz for Pesach, which is a whole different thing. So you could have where the loaves were chometz on Pesach, and therefore to mention kikros shabala bayis as well. So and yet our Mishnah is not listing chometz for Pesach at all. So we said because chometz for Pesach could just be a slice of bread, but it's not necessarily just a slice of bread, it could be a whole loaf, which is a davar shel minyan. The answer is, man shamat to omer lei, because who is it that you found in that Mishnah in Orla who says such a thing, who mentions loaves made by a balabas? Rabbi Akiva. That's specifically Rabbi Akiva. The Tanakhama over there in Orla lists six things. He doesn't consider kikros shabala bayis to be a davar shel minyan. Rabbi Akiva argues and adds that to the list. So therefore, Sahatana Lehasam, well then we already have it listed over there. Rabbi Akiva Moshev Akiva Shabbala Bais. So again, therefore, given that the Tana of our Mishnah knows already the Mishnah in Orla, then therefore we have no reason to list it again over here.
We got to making a hole in an animal, that was their Goyish style.
Yeah.
Does it make it trefa also? What's just the issue?
Well, I mean, you cut out the animal's heart, obviously the animal's going to die on the spot. So what they would actually do is they would make a hole through the skin, they would reach in, they would carve out the animal's heart, offer it to Avodah Zarah, and then the rest of the, I don't know what they do with the rest of the animal. Yeah, of course, then I don't know what they do with the rest of the animal, maybe they'd be macro of it, maybe they'd eat it, I have no idea. But whatever the case, the point is if you find a skin like that, that has a hole in the heart, you know that that animal with its skin was offered as a sacrifice to Avodah Zarah.
Only that little part you can't use?
No, the whole thing becomes also because the whole animal was given as a korban to Avodah Zarah. So that explains the listing of our Mishnah, why it's listing only these things. So the bottom line is we're listing only things that are Dabash of Minyan and Isurei Hanah and have not already been listed in the Mishnah in Orla. So the Mishnah had continued Harei Elu. So the Mishnah said, Harei Elu, behold, these are the ones that are Osir and Osir B'chol Shehu. So Ma'otimai, what else is the Mishnah coming to exclude that you might have thought to include? Then you have, the Mishnah had started off, Elu Asurin V'Osirin B'chol Shehu. So now when the Mishnah continues, Harei Elu, it sounds like it wants to, you might have thought to add more things to the list. I'm telling you it's only these. So what is it? So the answer is the most Dovash of Minyan will obviously Surah Hanah. Exactly that. It comes to exclude things which are Dovash of Minyan, but they're not Asabana. For example, a piece of Nevela meat. So therefore, a piece of Nevela meat gets mixed up with other ones, even though it is a Dovash of Minyan, it's not Asabana, so therefore it won't ask for the whole mixture.
And us to eat, but us.
It's also to eat, but it won't be Asabana, right. So, Tosfos actually points out there is a relevant Gemara in Chulin that says that taka won't be bottled because only davash of a minion is alone enough to be enough to make that it can't be bottled, and that's the halacha. Davash of ticharui liskabed, for example, is not bottled. So Tosfos says, fine, the Gemara doesn't mean that there are no other things that won't be bottled. There are, in fact, a piece of nevela will, in fact, not be bottled by virtue of that Gemara and Chulin. All the Gemara means over here is here, when the Tana is trying to find things that have both of these criteria and make his list based on that, so he's leaving out nevela because not osavahana. But in fact, a piece of nevela will, in fact, in practice, not be bottled by virtue of being a davar shel minyan. So therefore, if one piece of nevela gets mixed in with a whole bunch of other pieces of nevela, then all of them will be also, they won't be also ba'na, because nevela is not also ba'na, but they all will be also to eat, and we won't say that it'll be bottled b'shishim or b'roiv or whatever. If it gets ground up, then it's not just tichoru liskabed anymore, but again, you can't grind it up b'hatchila, because like we touched on yesterday, in mevatel isl b'hatchila, you can't go be mevatel again. Vice versa, you could also say that it's being mamayit things that are also bahana but not davash minyan. For example, a slice of chametz on Pesach, which, as we said, again, it's also bahana but it's not a davash minyan. So therefore, it's not going to be in the list of our mishnah. So according to Rashi, that would mean, in other words, the Tana of our mishnah would actually hold that it is bottle, and according to Tosfos, not necessarily he would hold that it's bottle. He just wouldn't put it in his list because his list is limited only to things that are osabana and davash minyan. Okay. Mishnah says, Yayin Nesach Shenafel Labur. If Yayin Nesach fell into a pit of wine, now we talked about yesterday all the details about what falls in first and what's bottle. So according to the opinions, we said over there, Rav Dimi had said that even if you pour wine from a barrel of Yayin Nesach into kosher wine, it'll be bottle, rishon bottle. We said he would have to understand our Mishnah as talking about where an entire barrel fell in all at once. So then call it osabana. So then the whole thing becomes osabana because Yain Nesach is osabana, and then there's no bintel over there. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, you mocha kula la'orik asavim chutzmid me yain nesach shabai. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you don't need to do that. You can just sell it all to a guy except for the value of the yain nesach. So you have, let's say, 100 gallons of kosher wine over there. 1 gallon of yain nesach got mixed in. Fine, you're going to say it's not bottle, but now you have 101 gallons of wine total. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says, fine, you approach a guy and tell him I have 101 gallons of wine to sell to you. I'll charge you for 100, and I'll throw in one for free. So the Gemara says, "Omer Rav Halacha k'Reb Shimon Gamliel Chavis b'Chavis." So Rav says the halacha will be like Reb Shimon Gamliel, but only when you have barrels that got mixed up with barrels. So you have not the case we were just talking about, where a person had a pit full of yain of kosher wine, and then yain nesach got mixed in. Rather, Rav is saying when you had 1,000 barrels of kosher wine, and then 1 barrel of yain nesach got intermingled among them, and you can't tell which is which. So now the halacha will be like Reb Shimon Gamliel that you can go sell the whole 1,001 barrels and then charge for only 1,000.
You don't commission that you have to tell you have enough. Or...
So that's the thing. You're not having enough. You're having enough from all the other ones, which are kosher. No yain nesach got mixed into the other 1,000 barrels. All it is you have 1,001 barrels over here, and you can't tell which is which.
You're selling 100.
So you're selling 1,000 for that. You're selling 1,001 for the price of 1,000. So Rav Shimon Gamliel will allow that, and Rav is saying the halacha will be like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but only in that case. So Tosfos points out, Reb Shimon Gamliel won't allow you to sell them individually, because then you have a problem. Eventually, you're going to be selling the Yain Nesach one. But here, where you're selling them in bulk, and one of them is Yain Nesach, and you're just not going to charge for that, then Reb Shimon Gamliel is fine with that. And Rav says, Halacha is like it in that.
Obviously,
you have to sell it over there. Yeah, obviously. But not when it's wine mixed with wine, not when you had a barrel full of kosher wine, and then some non-kosher wine fell into it, then that would then we wouldn't say that you could, even then the halacha would not be, like Reb Shimon Gamliel in that, then the whole thing is also by now. Shmuel says, no, the halacha will be like Reb Shimon Gamliel, even when wine gets mixed up in wine. Even then, you could say, you figure out, you have here 101 gallons of wine, 100 of them were kosher, one of them was Yain Nesach. So now you sell the 101 to the goy for the price of 100.
So in this situation, it doesn't make a difference if it's a little bit of one, if it's one fixed to one of the...
That's the thing. According to Shmuel, there's no difference. According to Rav, the difference is, do you have the actual wine got mixed together? Nope, then it's all Sabana. According to Shmuel, it doesn't matter whether the actual wine got mixed together or whether it's only barrels that got intermingled and you can't tell which is which.
Eventually, so...
You're selling to a goy, one way or the other. Obviously, only goyim are going to be able to drink it. But according to Rav, if you had a barrel of kosher wine and then some yayin nesa fell into it, and you have, we don't have the details that we talked about yesterday where the yayin nesa can be bottled. Let's say we have a scenario where the yayin nesa won't be bottled because you don't have 60, for example. Then Rav is going to say the whole thing is osbana. You can't even sell it to a goy. As opposed to Shmuel will say that you could. When you had a whole bunch of barrels or bottles in wine, and then you have one barrel or bottle of wine of yayin nesa got mixed in among them, you can't tell which is which. But the actual wine in the barrels is still intact. It hasn't been touched. You just don't know which barrel is which. Then Rav is saying, fine, you can sell it all minus the price of the one for the goyim. The logic is that when you have a whole bunch of barrels of them, Rashi explains, you can take one barrel, throw it into the river, and assume maybe that's the one that got mixed in, and then the rest of them will be mutzabana. But when you have wine mixed into wine, you can't do that. What are you going to do? Even if you're going to take a gallon of it and pour it out, you still have the rest of it is necessarily mixed in with the rest of the wine. Shmuel says there's no difference in that. You're just selling it to a goy, yeah. The chain omer Rabbi Babachana omer Rabbi Yochanan afilu yain be yain. Rabbi Babachana says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the din would be according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, even when wine gets mixed with wine, that would be like what Shmuel says. The chain omer Shmuel bar Nosson omer Rabbi Chanina afilu yain be yain. The chain omer Menachem omer Rabbi Bavua afilu yain be yain. So all of them hold like Shmuel that the halacha is that it will work even when wine gets mixed in with wine. That even where you don't have a case of bittul, even where you can't drink the wine yourself, you can at least sell it to a goy minus the price of the wine of the yain nesach not mixed in. Amar Rav Nachman halacha l'maisa. So Rav Nachman says the actual bottom line halacha l'maisa is yain nesach is as follows. If yain nesach gets mixed in with kosher wine, and here we mean Rashi says yain nesach mamish as an actual wine that was poured in honor of Avodah Zarah, not sam yainam. So then, Yayin b'yayin osur. If wine mixes with wine, then it will be osur b'anah. So even though we had all these amiroyim who said afilu yayin b'yayin, nevertheless halacha l'maisa, we don't follow them. But halacha l'maisa, we say that it will all be osur b'anah, and you cannot sell it to a goy for the minus subtracting the price of the wine. That's when it's actual yayin nesa. Then it will be all osur b'anah. Chobis b'chobis mutter, but if it's barrel mixed in with barrels, then it will be mutter to the extent that you can sell it to the goy subtracting the price of the one barrel. Stam yayin, and then when you have, what about if it's not yayin nesach, which is stam yayinam, so wine of a goy where you don't know if he poured it for Avodah Zarah, but there's a suspicion that he might have, then that kind of thing is also only the Rabbanon. So then, afilu yayin b'yayin mutter, so then even if it's wine mixed with wine, it will be mutter b'anah, and you take and you figure out the amount of the amount that fell in, you subtract that, and you sell the rest of the goy for an appropriate price. Many times, but not necessarily. You would have goyim like to do nisuch, but it doesn't necessarily mean that every single bit of wine that they had was necessarily used for nisuch. But maybe we have suspicion of it, which is why we have the whole concept of samyena. But nevertheless, the fact is, we don't know that it was poured for Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's really only also Dirabanan. Yeah, by the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that this Gzeira, when we talk about Dirabanan, by the way, we usually think Dirabanan being Hashif Nesagdola, or the time of the Mishnah, or the Gemara, or whatever. The Gemara actually explains in Sanhedrin that the Gzeira against San Yedem goes all the way back to the time of, when Gnos Midian and Shittim over there seduced the Jewish people into drinking their wine and Avodah Zarah, or whatever, so then they made a Gzeira against Goyish wine, but yeah. It's still considered Dirabanan because it's still not one of the, even though it was during Moshe Rabbeinu's lifetime, it's still not one of the 613 mitzvahs that Hashem gave Moshe.
Well, on the other hand, we also learned that a goy wants his daughter to know that he can sell to a yid, and then he'll do everything to be careful.
So there is that. If if he wants his wine to be under Ashkocha, then yeah, he's gonna
sealed.
Yeah, he's gonna want him. Yeah, double seal and all that. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So now that we've been talking about the dinim of Hanah from Yain Nesach, now let's talk about, so yeah, you know, how is wine made in the first place? You have a vat full of olives, which are stomped on or trampled on, and then the wine starts flowing. Now, if Goyim have used a wine press, the wine becomes Yain Nesach. Now the press itself absorbed wine. Now let's talk about how you go about kashering it. Suppose that later on a Yid wants to use that same wine press or those same kalim for kosher to wine. How does he go about doing it? So the Mishnah says, das shel evin shezipsa over kechavim. If you have a stone wine press, where a goy applied tar to it, they would usually coat the inside of the press with tar so that's proof against leaks. Like this, you have the gas would usually be dug into the ground. So it would usually be a hole in the ground, and in this case it's lined with stone. But still, the wine could leak out from between the stones, so they would usually coat it with tar in order to keep it from leaking out. Rashi also adds then what they would do is afterwards they would put, now the fact is, tar smells really bad. You don't want it to give an off taste to the wine or an off smell. So afterwards they would apply a little wine to, they would coat the tar with a little wine in order to remove some of the objectionable odor. So now the problem is the goy is doing this, and now the wine that he touched and applied to the press over there becomes Yain Nesach. So therefore, so menagva v'hi tahora. So now, if a yid wants to use this wine press, he has to do niguv, which the Gemara is going to explain as a process involving water, involving scouring it with water and ashes, and then he'll be able to use it. Then it's considered that removes enough of the effect of the enough of the taste of the yain nesach that now he'd be maybe the vort is that now it makes it nos and tam l'fagam, because now the ashes mix with the wine residue over there and it gives it an objectionable taste. Whatever it is, then that'll be fine.
Boiling hot water
is something else. We're going to discuss in the Gemara. We have a variety of different ways of kashering presses and things like that. So that's if it's made out of stone. The shell eats. What about if it's made out of wood? And the goy coated it with tar. The problem is that wood is much more absorbent, so it's going to absorb much more of the wine. So then Rebbe Omer Yenagiv, Rebbe says that even then Niguv is good enough. Chacham say no, in that case you have to take a stronger step, you have to peel off all of the tar and then do Niguv. The Gemara doesn't mention that, but then I'm buying add that would mean you have to peel off the tar and then do Niguv on the bare wood, and then you can have a yid reapply the tar and so forth.
Okay, if you put new tar, it's still absorbed from behind?
Yeah, apparently it absorbs through the tar, yeah. Yeah, I think Mar mentions it. I think Mar mentions in Bog Metzia, for example, in Hamachkid, you have a case over there where a person deposits wine with somebody else, and over time the amount of wine gets reduced because it gets absorbed into the container. So I think Mar mentions over there that actually you have there, depending on the material the container is made from, depending on the type of material that was used to make the earthenware, for example, depending whether the barrels are lined with tar or not, they're going to absorb different amounts. Yeah. Next, Vishal Cheres, what happens if the wine press is made out of earthenware and it was coated with tar? Now, earthenware, we know you can't kasher. So, even though you peeled off the, tar, it's still going to be also because the earthenware itself absorbed the wine, and now there's no way of getting it out because you can't kasher earthenware.
Glass,
you have a major machlokas rishonim, which Adai Yemazeh, you have a difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim about glass. The one way of looking at it is glass, we see the mice, that glass is not really very absorbent, so therefore maybe it should be considered. So for example, Sfaradim hold that way, they hold you can actually use the same glasses from Milchuk's and Fleishik's, even hot, and there's not a problem. Ashkenazic posts can take exactly the opposite view. They say glass is considered like clay cheres in that regard, because after all the material they're made from, cheres is made from clay, glass is made from sand, they're similar enough, they're both made from types of earth. So therefore, Ashkenazic posts can consider glass to be like earthenware and can't be kashered at all.
Okay, so what would be an example of earthenware
for just like China, for example. They can make a wine press out of China, because here we're talking about a wine press often would be built into the ground, but not necessarily. It can be a keli that's above ground, and then you put the grapes in it and stomp them. So here we're talking about various kinds of keli like that, yeah. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava Davka Zipsa. When we're saying there's a problem if the goy applied the tar, it's Takadavka if he applied the tar. Aval Dorach Baloy, but it wouldn't be a problem if the goy only pressed grapes in that wine press. If he hadn't applied the tar, and as Rashi had added over there, with a bit of wine that you add to the tar to prevent it from smelling, if there was already a ready used wine, a ready made wine press, And a goy goes and stomps grapes in their loy, then there's not a problem. You don't need nigruv. All you need to do is rinse it out. So the Gemara says, Pritza. Well, obviously, Zipsa's now. And the Mishnah had said that he applied the tar, implying that there's not a problem unless he does that. The answer is Ma'udatem, or Wajina for the Dorachba. Without that, you might have thought even just the goy pressing the grapes over there maybe also requires nigruv if you want to use it for kosher wine. Bahaida Katani Zipsa Ucha de Milsa Katani. Maybe the Tana is mentioning Zipsa only because that's the normal thing, is that they add some wine over there. Kamashmalan, therefore, Rava needs to tell us that no, only when Zipsa does it need nigu, but if you only pressed grapes in it, then and it didn't have tar applied to it, then all you need to do is rinse it. Because then it doesn't really absorb that much just from the pressing, in other words.
That's not the tar, which is there made to prevent it from leaking.
It's made to prevent it from leaking, but nevertheless it absorbs.
But it doesn't. But in tar, it doesn't matter what the backing is.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
If it's earthenware, if it's...
Well, that's what we're saying. Okay. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Ikadami, now there's another version of what Rava says. Omar Rava, Davka Zipsa. The second version is Rava says that no, the other way around. If Davka on Mishnah is saying that if the goy applied the tar, then you can do niguv. Avol Dorachba, but according to the second version of Rava, if the goy actually pressed grapes in this vat, loisagi lebe niguv, then niguv is not enough. Then you actually have to remove the tar because then wine actually gets absorbed into the cracks of the tar. So in the first version, Rava was saying that if a goy presses grapes in there, it's more of a kula, and you only need to rinse it. In the second version, Rava is saying that you actually are going to need to remove the tar altogether. Unlike in the case of our Mishnah, you don't necessarily need to remove the tar. If it was a stone behind the tar, then he said all you need is nigruv. Here, it's not enough. You're going to have to actually peel off the tar.
So I have no market one.
Yeah. So the Gemara again says in the second version, Pieta Zipsa Tnan. Again, our Mishnah had said Zipsa, that he applied the tar, implying that if there's that other cases would be different. And the answer is Ma'uda Tema. Without Rava telling us, you would have thought, Huadin Afilu Dorachba, Afilu Dorachba. Maybe even the same din would apply if the goy actually pressed grapes in it. Behind the Katani Zipsa Urcha de Milsa Katani. And again, you could say it mentioned Zipsa only because that's the normal way of doing it. Kamash Malan, therefore Rava says, Davka Zipsa, that only if he applied the tar and with it some wine, then you have to do nigruv, or then you have the various possibilities in the Mishnah, depending on what the backing material is. Avol Dorach Bover, if the guy actually pressed grapes in it, lois sagile b'nigruv, then it's not enough to do nigruv, you actually have to peel off the tar. And we know that there was such a case, because the Gemara tells, Ki Ahuda also became a priya. A guy once had, a goy had applied tar to his wine press, and he came to the priya to ask what he needs to do. Omale. So the man tells the priya, Havli gavra the dochile matzatoi. Please give me one of your talmidim who knows how to kasher my press. I had a goy apply the tar. Now I've been informed that that's a problem, and now I need to kasher my vat. So please give me one of your talmidim who knows these halachas and can kasher my vat.
And does he wish back he has?
Well, we'll see. Omale l'Rav Zilbadeh. So the Priya tells Rav, who was his Talmud and also his nephew, he's actually a double nephew of the Priya, as we know. But anyway, he tells him, Zilbadeh, go together with this guy, go kasher his vat. Make sure that you don't leave room for him to go and complain about me in the mismanage. Meaning, make sure that you do an effective way of kashering. I don't want to have that you're going to cut corners over here, that you're going to follow some, you're going to use some heter or something, and afterwards it's going to turn out that it wasn't a good heter, and then the guy's wine is going to end up being treif, and he's going to come complain in me in the mismanage. Make sure that you do it to the highest standards. Also, Chazid have a Shia Tvei. So Rav went together with the guy and saw that the vat was very, very smooth. So the tar had been applied and it had a very smooth surface. Omar, so Rav thinks to himself, Havadi, but Nigru Sagula must be. Surely Nigru would be enough over here. It's impossible that it was actually used yet. The goy can't possibly have actually trod grapes in here because then the coating, the tar would be a little rough in places. So Rahavi, the Ka'oz of Asi, but as Rav was walking around over there and checking it out in more detail, he saw cracks underneath the stone, and he saw that those cracks are full of wine. So now Rav realized, you know what, obviously there's more here than meets the eye. Here I thought it was smooth and it only needed niggles. Now it turns out there are actually cracks over here.
Well, he's up on the smooth one, but he cracks.
Yeah, maybe. Omar, so now he says to himself, holy sagile, love a niggle. Obviously, niggle is not going to be enough over here. Elabakilof, here we have to actually peel off the tar and then, and kasher and wash off or do niggle or whatever to what's underneath. So the Hainu, the Omali Chavivi, so now Rav Chatzach, he says, now I understand what Chavivi. Chavivi literally means my beloved one. The same way as in Lashon Kodesh, the word doid means uncle and also means beloved one, like in Shirashim. The same way in Aramaic, Chavivi means my uncle and also means my beloved.
Now I understand why
you
told me.
Now I understand. He says, now I understand. The Hainu, Omali Chavivi, make sure you don't give cause for complaint against me at the Beis Medrash, because if I hadn't checked more carefully, if I had thought that it needs only niggle, he would have done that. Later on, he would have pressed wine in there, and in fact, eventually somebody would have discovered those cracks and realized, wait a minute, niggle wasn't enough. This wine over here is now usher, and therefore there's trouble, so now it's a good thing that I checked more thoroughly. So it doesn't say over here what the material was underneath, but the point is that it does. He saw that there were cracks over there underneath it. So underneath the coating, so it's true. It doesn't say what the material was, but yeah. Fine. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabban, we learn in a Braisa, Hagas, the actual vat itself, where the grapes are pressed, the machatz, and the ladle, which they use to ladle out the wine from the pit into the barrels, the mashbech, or funnel, that you use to pour wine, to pour from one keli into another, all of those that belong to a goy. Now let's say, now those things are not always coated with tar. Those things might just be those things that actually explain, we're talking about they're made out of udin here. And they're not necessarily coated with tar, because one thing with that, you want to coat it with tar to make sure that the wine doesn't leak out. But with these things, they're only used for on a momentary basis, so you're not so worried about leaks, so you don't coat them with tar. So here you're talking about that all these things are so all these things belong to a goy, and they're made out of they're made out of earthenware, and they're not coated with tar. Rebbe Matir b'nigov. So Rebbe says all you need, if you want to use these kalim afterwards for kosher wine, all you need to do is nigov, is the process with water and ashes. So at the end, we haven't yet gone into detail of what nigov is. First, we're talking about when you need nigov versus when you need other things. At the bottom of the Amud, if you'll start learning tomorrow, Best Hashem, we'll talk about what exactly the process of nigov entails. So Rebbe Matib and Nigel. So Rebbe says it's good enough to do Nigel for them. V'chom Ostrin, v'chom say it will be Osir. Nigel is not enough for those things because they absorb wine while they were being used. So Umoyde Rebbe became canon. Shehein Asurin. Rebbe will agree when it comes to barrels of goat, or Kankanim is not really barrels, Kankanim is more like bottles or something, but whatever, things where wine is kept in there for a considerable amount of time, Shehein Asurin, that those are going to be Osir, those you have to, so Rashi brings over here, we actually have something that the Gemara had explained earlier in the Masechta. Here what you have to do is that you fill them up with water, you leave the water in there for 24 hours, then you pour it out and you repeat that process 3 times. The wine was kept in there for a considerable amount of time, but after all, it's something cold, so you don't need to kasher the kalim per se, but you do need to do this milui v'iru, it's called.
Any time.
Right, that way it gets rid of any time.
So what we learned, so you could take grapes, you could pour water on it once, two, three times, and a certain time there's no taste.
Yeah, to that extent, yeah. So Rebbe would agree that they would be osir even though they don't have tar. So the Gemara says, so the question is, Ma Hefresh, so the Braisa continues, Ma Hefresh Ben Zelazeh, what's the difference between bottles or barrels which are going to be ulcer and the other ones where Rebbe says Nigru is enough? And the answer is, Zeh Machnis Bekiyum, Zeh Machnis Bekiyum. Because the difference is, the barrels or the bottles, they put wine in there for a considerable amount of time. So therefore they absorb more. As opposed to the vats and the ladles and whatnot, you only use them for a short amount of time. Now that's if they were earthenware. Rashi explained that here it has to be talking about till now earthenware, because now the Braita is going to go on to talk about other materials.
Shall eight?
It's the worst. You can't be the catcher, right? Shall eight? Shall eight? What about what about if the vats or ladles or whatever were made out of wood, out of wood or out of stone? So then you nagir, then you need to do nigv. The employum is a fof and asurin, but if they were coated with tar, then they're going to be also unless you peel off the tar. So the Gemara says, v'atnan, but wait a minute though. So in short, the Braisa is saying as follows. So one of the things the Mishnah and the Braisa had mentioned is a gas, is the vat where they press the grapes. So again, it might be built into the ground, or it might be a container, might be a separate container. Now, all Mishnah had said that a gas, you have the what all Mishnah had said is that that when it's made out of stone, then you need nigruv. When it's made out of wood, then Rebbe also holds you need nigruv, and the Chum say you have to actually peel off the tar. And if it's earthenware, then he said even if you peel off the tar, it's still going to be ulcer. Now, in our Braisa, though, we're saying about a vat, we're saying that that when it's made, we also talk about the same materials, stone or wood or earthenware, but we had different dinim about them. So the Gemara asks, well, Tanan, gas tol evan zips chum menagwa b'tahara. Here we're saying that if it's made out of stone and the goy coated it with tar and put a little wine in there as well, then you need niguv, and everybody would agree that it needs niguv. Whereas the Braisa is saying that the Braisa is saying that it's also period. And the Mishnah had said that, and then when it comes to wood, also Rebbe had said in the Mishnah that with wood all you need to do is niguv, and the Chachamim say and the Chachamim say you need more than that. And here in the Braisa, Rebbe is saying if it's coated with tar, it's also the Braisa is saying anything coated with tar is also. So what's going on over here? The answer is masnisim v'le dorachbo, because in our Mishnah we're talking about where the goy did not yet press grapes in it; he only coated it with tar. So therefore, all you need is niguv, and therefore, if it's a stone, it wasn't used yet, but you have the problem that he put wine, he smeared some wine on it while he was putting on the tar in order to prevent the smell from affecting the wine. So now, therefore, all you need to do in the case of stone is niguv, and in the case of wood is machalik, sedevi, and the chachamim, whether niguv or peeling off the tar. Braise, the dorachba, whereas the braise is talking about where the goy actually pressed grapes in it, and therefore, so now, for sure, you need to peel off the tar and otherwise toss it. Now we had the two versions of Rava before about what happens when Goy quests grapes in it. We had the first version of Rava that we can be makel, and you don't really need very much in that case, because unlike where you applied the tar, in the first version of Rava, we said that you don't really need much at all. All you need to do is rinse it out. So now this Braisa doesn't seem to fit with that first version of Rava. So Tosfos draws a distinction that the Mishnah could be talking about where the vat belongs to a yid, and then one time a goy used it for wine pressing. Here we're talking about one where the goy used it again and again for wine pressing, so then over time it absorbed a lot more of his yainess. And then Tosfos goes on to say that actually when they're coated with tar, there may not be a difference because tar is going to absorb the wine even a one-time thing. So the Gemara continues. Omamar, so now let's analyze the Braisa a little more. We said in the Braisa, Hagas v'amachat v'amashbech shalev gechavim, a vat or a ladle or a funnel of goyim that are made out of earthenware, Rebbe matab and niguv. Rebbe says it's enough to do niguv, v'chamim oyster, and the chamim say it's osir. So according to the chachamim, you have a problem. You can't do anything with it because it absorbed non-kosher wine. So the Gemara asks, but wait, v'hanan t'nan shocheres afish akolof zefes harezu asura. In the Mishnah, we said that a vat made out of earthenware, even if you peel off the tar, remains osir. But in the Braisa, Rebbe is saying that you can do niguf with it. So Rebbe is contradicting himself in the Mishnah and the Braisa. The answer is Omar Rabba Sefer Masnis and Asar and Rabbanon. The end of our Mishnah is only according to the Chachamim. When the Mishnah says V'shalcheres after V'shalcholofas Azefes Harezu Asura, don't think that's according to both Rebbe and the Chachamim. That's only according to the Chachamim. Rebbe would in fact disagree, as we see in the Braisa that he disagrees. So in other words, it comes out, Robert is saying that you have that the only case where they completely agree is where it's made out of stone. So then the Mishnah had said that you need nigul. But if it's made out of earthenware, if it's made out of wood, and then Rebbe says nigul, and the Chum say peel off the tar. And as far as what's made out of earthenware, there Rebbe also would say that nigul is good enough, and the Chum would say that it's also period.
So Rebbe
by both earthenware and wood will hold that in all three cases. Rebbe will hold that nigul was an effle. Okay, so the Gemara says. The Gemara says Dorash Rava Nava Autachu. Rava says that another angle on kashering vats of goyim is kasher it with boiling water. So if you have a wooden or stone one that was coated with tar, So now we're saying you have to, all this time we've been saying you have to peel off the tar. So now Robert is saying instead of peeling off the tar, if you don't want to do that, instead boil it, put it in boiling water, and then it will also be mutter. The boiling water may well remove the tar as well, but the point is if the tar survives it, then it'll be mutter.
These are the tools.
What? They were talking about the vat itself. The person bought a container from a goy and now wants to use it for pressing grapes, and it's coated with tar. So Rava is saying, if you don't want to peel off the tar and reapply the tar, instead what you can do is kasher it with boiling water.
The actual vat that's in the earth.
No, it's not necessarily in the earth. We're talking about Kaylee. When they press the grapes, right. Tosfos in this connection gets into a big discussion about eerie clearishin. Is it enough to just pour from a clearishin and that's a valid method of kashering, or do you actually have to immerse it in the boiling water? We know when you do agola, for example, you have to immerse it in boiling water. Here is Rava saying that's enough to just pour boiling water into it, or do you actually have to? Sometimes this gets into a big discussion about that. One point is that Yayin Nesach, given that it's cold, then you don't need as much. That wouldn't necessarily apply to other areas of kashering, where you're talking about hot things were used for it, then it really might not be enough. Rashi, by the way, points out the word Nava is the Aramaic word for a vat, for a wine press. You find Rashi refers to an expression from the famous Piyut Akdomus. You do have that mentioned in Akdomos as well, I think, but you have in Targum on the bracha of Yehuda, Yaakov's bracha to Yehuda, about how his land is going to be full of grapevines and wine presses and whatnot. So absolutely an ayin miyayin. So Targum Onkelos translates it: Yitufu Navo Yichamra Hebachamar. His wine presses will overflow with wine. So we see that the word Nava means a wine press.
Well, soon as you do that, this process with hot water three times. It'll have something, but
maybe. But the question is, that's Tosfos is bringing that the Rashbam holds that Iru is considered like a klishenin. That you pour from a klishenin, that's considered like a klishenin. So it may not work. Only over here, maybe it'll work because again, it was cold to begin with. But it wouldn't necessarily work in other areas of kashering. I mean, a lot of these dinim over here are relevant not just to Yayin Nesach. A lot of these dinim are relevant to kashering for Pesach or kashering from Treifus or Basa B'Cholov or whatever throughout the year. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara makes another point. Rava. Now we talked about over here about kankanim. We talked about barrels or bottles of a goy that he used for his wine, and we talked about how you need milui v'iru. You have to fill them up with water and pour out the water three times. So now in this connection, the Gemara mentions Rava ki have a meshadig gufi laharpanya. When Rava would send empty barrels to a place called Harpanya, and he was sending the empty barrels with a goy. Now the question is, he wants to make sure that the goy is not going to end up using the barrels on the way for his wine. So what would he do? Sofich lehu apumayhu. He would turn the barrels over. V'chosim lehu abirtsayhu. and he would seal them. He would seal the top of the sack on towards the bottom of the barrel. So in other words, now you have a chosim instead of chosim. You have the closing of the barrel, and that now you have. In order for him to be able to get to the inside of the barrel, he would have to break both seals. Kasavar.
By both.
Because he'd have to undo the seal on the top and then turn the barrel over and then.
So you have two openings, two seals.
Not two openings. The barrel only has one opening, but you have an opening of the barrel, and the barrel would be inside a sack. So The barrel was upside down inside the sack. So the reason is kasava, because Rava held koldavashim afnisa lekiyum. Whenever you have a keli where you use wine for storage for a considerable amount of time, afilu lefisha, even if you're only handing it over to a goy for a little while, he's just going to take it to Arpanya. Gozer veirabana. Nevertheless, Rava held that the chachamim made a gzera that you consider it like wine. Now earlier in the Masechta talked about in detail about how wine and a number of other things, if you're going to send them with a goy, require choisim b'seich choisim. The Gemara had said over there wine treilas. A couple of other things, meat, a couple of other things. You need choisim, besech choisim, because you have only one seal, the goy may forge it. But two, you're not so worried about that. So here, Rava held, now the barrel itself is not osabana, but the barrel is used to store wine for enough time that even though right now it's only in the hands of a goy for a small amount of time, if you're going to send it, yeah, then Rava held, you have to send it choisim, besech choisim. So therefore, so he did it that way. So,
I'm assuming if it still smells wine, but if he cleaned it out and he soaked it three times and he said it, then.
No, but Rava, I guess Rava figured maybe the people in Harpanya, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, the people of Harpanya were not such a chacham and may not realize that they need to milu v'iru or something. So better to make sure that the wine, that the barrels reach them intact in the first place without any possibility that the goy use them for his wine. Tosfos does draw a distinction, though, between the goofy, the barrels that we're talking about over here, were constantly being filled and emptied, as opposed to the barrels of the times of Tosfos. So the barrels, you go to a winery nowadays, you see the gigantic barrels that you have that they use nowadays, those are not so easily fillable and emptyable. Those you can't just go and so easily fill them. So therefore, so really, Tosfos says maybe you wouldn't have to seal them. Or nevertheless, in Kol Makom Tov LaHachmir, it would be good to be machmir in that case as well.
That's a day we move.
What?
That's a day move them.
If they move, they're carrying them from one place to another. Yeah.